Today's program is brought to you by the Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Did you know that today Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheese that win more awards than any other state or country? To learn more, visit eatwisconsincheese.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Greenhorns, this is Severin. This is Greenhorns Radio. Radio for young farmers, by young farmers, talking about young farmers who are sticking their hands into the problem and turning it into good work. And today we have Miles, who is in the Hudson Valley and is managing Syringa Mountain School. Welcome, Miles.
Howdy, howdy, Severin. I'm out west. I'm in Idaho.
Oh, golly. I had another guest, and I'm sorry. Why don't we just start with you introducing yourself while I read your bio so that I'm not such a backwards person.
Yeah, well, why not? Miles, I'm here in Idaho. I'm actually working at an emerging Waldorf charter school, and they've got a gardening program. And, you know, as I slowly hone in on my life's calling, being part of that program has been pretty good, and and sort of novel for our part of the world in our bubble, our little bubble of Idaho.
It's nice to be in a Waldorf bubble. Almost,
you know, Severin, that's how
anywhere.
I met you, and you just you struck out as having to be a Waldorf kid, and you were.
I am a Waldorf kid. Are you a Waldorf kid?
No. But I was at the Camp Hill Village in upstate New York, and that.
Oh, was I buying pig from you back in the time?
No. And I met you recently at the Biodynamic Conference.
Wow, wasn't that a good conference? That was in Santa Fe, and the Biodynamic Association is kicking butt.
Yeah. It was beautiful. And, So anyhow, I work with the kids, and it's inspiring work. And I think about all the accomplished people out there in this sort of young, emerging farm scene, and there's plenty of heroes that I look up to. I mean, I'm just getting my first steps, so...
Well, let's talk about how you found yourself in Idaho and kind of what informs your practice of biodynamics. Not everybody who listens to this show necessarily knows all about biodynamics, so it might be worth a cursory descriptive phrase or two.
Yeah, there's not much happening in Idaho, as far as related to biodynamic farming, but... I was introduced more or less by the label, but then, you know, really got my introduction going to Camp Hill Village. Rudolf Steiner was a philosopher from, what, Vienna, Austria?
Austria?
He was the inspiration, one of those first pioneers of organic farming, but then went a bit beyond organic just to include... kind of the cosmic rhythms and sort of almost a spiritual a reverence for the work and spiritual reverence for the soil as well and as well as creating inoculants and sprays, you know, compost preps and sprays for the soil and the plants. And yeah, what a pioneer. I mean, he had a lot of amazing insights, and there were a group of farmers, what was it, back in 1924, thereabouts? 25?
Yeah.
Was when he did an agricultural lecture and inspired so many people to begin this journey. They had already realized that their their rock powder amendments weren't quite cutting it, and they didn't have the vitality on the farms that they had,
even a generation previous.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, it's a beautiful story of how observation and dedication and engagement became a movement, and that movement has had such an impact around the world. The Camp Hill Village that you're talking about is a group, it's a system of farms, a whole network of farms that are helping people with learning disabilities or developmental disabilities or special ways of being to be in a residential therapy environment and farming. So basically, their farm, instead of getting people a lot of drugs or putting them in mental place, it's cooperative co-housing, doing purposeful work with meaning. Many of the young farmers that we are always talking to, you could argue, we're the kinds of kids who used to get dosed with Ritalin, some of us. At least I am. And being with animals can be a really healthy alternative to drugs.
Yeah.
So tell me about the vision that you're going to fulfill there in Idaho.
Idaho is unique. It's a beautiful place to be, and I'm up in the sort of high, dry. It's a high desert area. It may not be the farmland that you would find in Washington and Oregon, but I think it has its own benefits of the dryness. There's certain diseases and factors that you wouldn't have to deal with. So. It's got a lot of potential, and I other than working with the school, I mean, one of my goals is to start an orchard, and it's in a bit of a windswept area, but I think there's potential. There's good soil out in Idaho for young farmers, I'm sure there's a fair amount of it in upstate New York, but. Idaho's a good place, and it's got the, as you head lower into the.
I mean, there's not a lot of things that are alike, to be honest. So I'm just kind of like arranging things.
Yeah.
So you can see them.
Fine too.
And cleaning. But it's like none of this stuff matches anything else. I mean, I'm putting all the nuts.
Like I know what it is. Yeah, like those are sockets.
Yeah, I'm putting all the sockets and nuts together.
Great. These are like electrical.
Hey, I can't hear anything.
You can't. Miles, are you still on the line? Do we lose him? Hello?
All of a sudden, I stopped being able to hear him.
All right, let me try calling him back. One sec.
There's problems with this radio, like the equipment or something. Because I have to get an aspirin. I just got headached. Maybe it's because there's like PCBs in this shit. There's some stuff that's kind of seems like it's water or.
Okay, everybody here?
I'm here, yeah.
I'm here.
Okay, we can just pick up.
That was funny. We'll just start where we left off, because I stopped being able to hear you.
Oh, right, yeah, okay.
So, let's talk a little bit about Idaho and agricultural history and context of Idaho. Obviously, the money and power of slavery that was created by cotton and exports became capital, and the prosperity of the nation moved west, and the prosperity of the nation was able to use dollars from the east to build huge dams in the west to make land that was formerly a desert arable and irrigable in a great spasm of dam building. And Idaho is one of the big beneficiaries of that epoch of American history. Do you want to just like talk a little bit about what the landscape is?
Yeah, you know, I'm not on the Snake River. I'm not in the Snake River Plain area, but yeah, you know, it's got a rich history and certainly huge infrastructure projects put the place on the map. And you know, but it's a good place to grow. I mean, you know, there's the Treasure Valley, and which is the Boise area, and then the Magic Valley, which is Twin Falls area, and that's kind of the, you know, stretches along the Snake River Plain. And I wish I could give you more details about the soil, but I mean, the one thing I do know is that it's got to be a place in transition. You know, I mean, the old guard is. You know, they're getting older. So I think there's a lot of opportunities and probably opportunities to gain access to land if you can, you know, if you can still deal with the occasional crop duster and, you know, pesticides in your breathing space and so forth.
So that's a good tip. What's the evidence that you're alluding to when you're looking around? You just mean in the feed store, everyone you see is 80?
No, just the general sense that I don't feel like, you know, I feel like Oregon, Washington versus Idaho, it's like there hasn't been a lot of young people that have moved in to fill the void. I can't really, it's more a sense, I can't say that I have evidence. It's just sort of, I don't see a lot of young farmers emerging compared to, you know, say Portland or Seattle or something like that, you know, or, but it's coming. I mean, you know, it's on its way, certainly. I don't have evidence.
So let's talk about how you got there, and the places that you went maybe which were hipper to get training that give you the skills to come out there.
Right.
Find opportunity. You want to talk about your journey?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. You know, I went out. Well, I'm 40, you know, and still working on, you know, discovering the path that I'm at, you know, this path. But I don't know. I went to the islands, Kauai, and then I realized that because I was in this Idaho bubble, I was raised here, and you know, it's totally isolated. And if we didn't have transportation, we would not really be eating. but we could be feeding ourselves. And, you know, so I went off. My journey began on the islands on Kauai, and I realized, whoa, there's this world of, you know, young farmers doing, you know, living in Quonset huts and eating themselves collectively and trying to make food happen. And then, you know, along the way, there's so many beautiful, heroic people, you know, and the Camp Hill was certainly a tremendous experience, and, you know, doing an internship with the Herb Farm in Williams, Oregon, and just being exposed to sort of that world of medicinal herbs and all that goes into growing those wonderful herbs for people to be healing themselves with. And, you know, just little parts and pieces along the way, like anyone, and, you know, being inspired by people like Rich Ocheck, you know, these seed savers and these herbalists and, you know, Paul Stamets and, I mean, so many heroes. So, and here I am talking about my heroes on the radio. I wish I could step into those shoes. Maybe when I'm in the next lifetime, or when I'm 70, perhaps we'll see. Or now.
Well, what you're saying is that you're humbled by the people that you get to share this movement with.
Truly.
And,
truly.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. So,
and now lots of young farmers are stepping up to join the boards of the organizations that were founded by lots of those farmers who are now gray hairs, and they're farmer women and farmer men starting up these organizations. Can you imagine they were starting all these organizations before there was any internet or Gmail, you know,
right,
or digital simultaneous filing system? So they had to schlep over to meetings to organize all this stuff. So how do you think we start to bitch and moan? We may want to keep that in mind.
Yeah, it's certainly a new age of information. And, you know, yeah, I can't imagine being, you know, the opportunities for traveling around and experiencing farms for, you know, I don't know, folks that are just coming out of high school, it just seems phenomenal. And so, you know, currently I work at this Waldorf school, and I've really been trying to bring that heart to these children, you know, about what's possible, and these children are like craving, you know, craving soil and craving the opportunity to eat a carrot out of the ground. And so, you know, so
let's talk about those kids, because I mean, if I were being, I mean, you know, my whole career is kind of like Obama Spring, hope, change, we can do it, get involved, here we go, type of thing. And now the politics of the situation are quite grim, and you know, we basically have a likely set of administrative decisions coming down the line not to abide by our carbon commitments in Paris, the commitment to keep about 80% of the known fossil reserves in the earth, in the ground, to prevent catastrophic climate change and all that it entails for agriculture and for coastal communities. And I just wonder how kids who are confronting that reality now, you know, it's like a really different psychological experience from,
oh boy.
From,
yeah.
Do you have any reflections about what the kids are thinking?
Well, you know, I think a lot of children are relatively distracted, and I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, the adults, it's such a heavy psychological burden. I mean, it's such a burden that I feel like, you know, so many people can't even take it on. And there's a fair amount of education that goes around, like, learning what, you know, where are the problem areas. And, you know, I don't know. I wonder, for myself personally, it's such a heavy, you know, situation. I just caught the tail end of your conversation with this other fellow that was, you know, farming in the carbon into the soil. And, I mean, that's so beautiful and necessary. And I think that I'm working with a slightly younger group, and I'm going to be moving potentially to an older group where, you know, these, you know, like teens, where I feel like they're ready to have that opinion, or they want to get upset about something and maybe hopefully do something about it as well along the way. But I don't know. You know, it's
yeah,
a lot of the kids I work with.
You can't lay it on the kindergartners right away.
Yeah, that's right. You can't lay it on too thick. You know, it's sort of a subtle thing because they need to experience their third grade or their Eden until they, you know, get to what, that 9-year change, and then all of a sudden they realize there's some woe in the world. And I don't think you can lay it on too thick right off the bat, because unless it's sort of what you can do positively. And so that's, you know, that's what we're up to in the garden, is just empowering them to see that these simple seeds can truly transform, you know, themselves. What a wonder.
Well, yeah, it's almost like you have to give them the confidence that life, the power of life, is so profound before you lay on them what conundrum civilization has gotten itself into.
Yeah. So
that's like a 1-2 pedagogy. Like, first you can notice how awesome things are, then we're going to let you know how devastating they are.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, you know, such interesting times to live, you know, where you have hopeful beyond measure, you know, heroic figures, and then at the same time these archetypical villains and titans doing what they're doing.
I just want to remind everybody that it's time to buy your almanac. We had a lot of really great authors, really amazing historical snippets, thanks to the historian of the National Farmers Union in Kansas. We love him, Tom Giesel. And all of y'all who contributed, please consider contributing to the next one. And while you're at it, get one for a friend or for your CSA, or spread the word to your favorite cafe or farm coffee shop. And consider having babies and sending them to Waldorf school. Okay. Thank you so much, Miles. I'm sorry for our weird problem, but it's all part of the gig.
Well, it's been a pleasure. We'll have to go visit Phil Green Farm one of these days.
Oh, yes. Let's do it. Let's do it in 2 weeks. Okay, bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.